Friends, when we think of troublesome times, I must say this. Oftentimes, for the sake of argument, one must stipulate to certain points of as facts. Now, let's hope that our friends who see no danger in the communist program will agree for the time being that there is such a danger, and that the danger may suddenly overcome America, just as it did Czechoslovakia and many other nations under communism. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that the Reds assume control. They are in control of communications. They are in control of public utilities. They slaughtered or imprisoned the police. They've clobbered resistance, and America lies prone, awaiting the blood purges that must certainly follow, enduring the terrifying period of vacuum before the caulked heels of godless communist tyranny come smashing down. Now, we might as well face this one fact, that we are faced with a problem called communism, and there are people who are to blame for it, and thank God there are ways out of our trouble. Now, we fought a war against the Nazis and the fascists, and we won. The Nazis and the fascists have been our enemies, and there's no doubt in the minds of Americans. I'm talking about Americans now. I'm not talking about people who will deny these evils. I'm talking about real, red-blooded, patriotic Americans. And I say there's no doubt in the minds of those Americans that Nazism and fascism are evil, and that we want no part of it. Yet with increasing intensity, we observe references in the press to Nazi and fascist activities in our country. Now, there have been no exposures of such activity, just references, veiled, insolent references. Insofar as we've been able to learn, there is no real Nazi or fascist threat within America, but we have, during the course of investigation, learned something very revealing, and that is that there is a communist conspiracy against this nation, against the churches, against the homes, against the schools, and against your very life. And as a major tactic of this conspiracy, well, as a major tactic of this conspiracy is to smear its opposition with the Nazi or fascist label. But let's look at the real trouble that we're facing today. Communist infiltration into the race revolution is becoming evident as investigation exposes leaders and organizations. A partial list of organizations involved in the civil rights movement, which reportedly has communist or communist fronters in its leadership, are, now I have a copy of this, so I'm going to give it, and I want every station to hold steady because we're not going to incriminate you. Now, here are some fronters: the Southern Conference Educational Fund Incorporated, the NAACP, the Montgomery Improvement Association, the National Council of Churches, the Young Socialist Alliance, the Militant Labor Forum, the Congress on Racial Equality, the Communist Party USA, and other movements that I'm not allowed to mention, but we have it in print. A thorough probing of the activities of some leaders in the forefront of racial agitation has brought to light the following. According to Frank A. Capell, C-A-P-E-L-L, editor of the Herald of Freedom and Metropolitan Review, he says, and I quote, "Adam Clayton Powell is an immoral clergyman and congressman from Harlem, New York City. He has been affiliated with 114 communist causes. He works in close cooperation with all agitation groups, including Malcolm X and his riflemen and the black Muslims who have over 100,000 members." Mr. Capell continues, "Martin," and I quote, "Martin Luther King has been working with the communists for years, a fact which has finally been admitted by even liberal writers. Carl Prussian, a friend of mine, an FBI counterspy, made a sworn affidavit, which clearly proves this, and it has been unchallenged. Mr. Capel brands Malcolm X as a convicted narcotics peddler and panderer. He has already organized 16 large rifle clubs in different parts of the United States. He openly advocates violence against the white people. Reports from all over the United States indicate the purchase of large quantities of rifles by Negroes. Jacob Javits is a spokesman in Congress for the civil rights agitators. Dr. Bella, an ex-communist, swore she started Mr. Javits in politics at the request of the Communist Party. She stated that it was arranged for him to get the Republican nomination in Washington Heights, New York City, although he did not live in that congressional district and was a registered Democrat. The Democratic Party was conveniently split, and Javits won the election. Another liberal spokesman appeared on the national scene. The hard-hitting Herald of Freedom editor describes Drew Pearson as a columnist who promotes the program of the left-wingers and is always willing to attack anyone who opposes communism. He's working with the agitation groups. This character, and Mr. Capel is referring to Pearson, arranged to have George Lincoln Rockwell, the so-called Nazi picket, his home in exchange for giving Rockwell the publicity he seeks in his attempt to discredit the legitimate right-wing conservative movements. Mr. Capel suggests that fellow newsmen should check the records of Drew Pearson's involvement in an incident in Lafayette Park, Washington, D.C. in 1952. Well, you see, Brother Burpo, why do you bring these things into it? Why? Well, my friends, when you look at the rioting and the bloodshed and the killing all over this once gracious nation called the United States, I think it's time that somebody pointed out the cause of our trouble and then offer a panacea, which I'm ready to do, and I have it documented and will bring it to you before I'm through. Algernon D. Black is described as chairman of the National Committee Against Discrimination in Housing. He's a national director of the NAACP, head of the Atheistic Ethical Culture Society, and he has had 60 affiliations with cited communist fronts. He's been active in the Council on African Affairs and has been an admirer of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, I'll get it right in a moment, as well as the communist leaders in the United States. Mr. Capel identifies Bayard Rustin as the Negro agitator who organized the March on Washington in August of 1963 and who was co-chairman of the New York City school boycott in which 400,000 people participated. Capel further charges that Rustin is a convicted homosexual who served a term in a federal prison rather than serve in the armed forces of our country. He showed his affinity to the communist conspiracy early in life by joining the Young Communist League. He was recently honored guest at a cocktail party in the Soviet embassy, but would have us believe he's no longer a communist. With enemies like him, they don't need friends, said Mr. Capel. Now, my friends, let me show you another thing that appeared in a recent issue of the Tuscan magazine, and I quote, "When is a communist stymied?" And the answer, when the public knows who he is. The communist doesn't really care whether people are opposed to communism in the abstract. Why? Because he can sell his poison by calling it civil rights, by calling it peace, by calling it civil liberties. He may even insist And I quote, of course I'm anti-communist, end quote, but once known, he has to look for greener propaganda pastures to help or help form new ones, which public exposure has not rendered ineffective. This is why a communist lives in mortal fear of exposure. Now, here comes another thing. When we talk about troublesome times, the news has come that some 5,000 more American military advisors will go to South Vietnam, and it illustrates anew the deadly seriousness of the United States' commitment to the defense of that country. The die is apparently cast in that embattled and trackless land, and the U.S. is digging in for a long and bitter campaign. The determination to help South Vietnam maintain its freedom appears to be increasing in direct relationship to the severity and effectiveness of communist guerrilla assaults. And certainly from this end of the line, my heart and Margaret's heart goes out to the precious mothers and daddies and wives and loved ones of our soldier boys that are being sent into a trouble spot from which it looks like there is no bottom to it. These are troublesome times, and the reason I point them out is this, friends, that we've got to come to the place where we recognize our trouble and then inform ourselves about it and pray about it and offer some way out. Now, Washington knew, the first president of our country, knew the night that he said, "Put none but Americans on guard tonight." He knew that he had two types of Americans to deal with. One willing to sell their country to England for money, and the other ready to die to hold it. Well, we have two types of Americans today. The one willing to sell our birthright, inherited from those men who offered their lives, their fortunes, that this nation might live with a heritage of freedom for the future. They would sell it for what? These Americans who have had the opportunity to develop every God-given talent they possess in the freest country ever dreamed of throughout the ages, built upon the foundation of Christian civilization, under a constitution 500 years ahead of its time, with individual responsibility, the test of good citizenship. These Americans would sell out to a United Nations world government, a combination of governments and like of them, all stages of civilization and like of it, with cannibalism rampant in Congo states with fewer inhabitants than Columbus, Ohio, each holding one vote as we do, the USA, with 190 millions of people. Now, we know all of these troubles. Now, what is the answer? Well, first of all, let's give an answer to our Negro friends over the nation. Here is a Negro in Washington, in Chicago, Mr. S.B. Fuller, Chicago's millionaire Negro manufacturer and department store owner, who practices selling in business and recommends same for solution to racial problems. This Negro, Mr. S.B. Fuller, has held a press conference in Chicago and announced that his race should halt demonstrations, go to school with their own people, stop suing, and start selling. Mr. Fuller stated that he did not agree with any part of the present civil rights bill. Now, this isn't some extreme radio minister talking. This is a Negro who has made his way in a free society, and here's what he's saying to his people. He said, and I quote, "I would resent anybody forcing me to hire someone I didn't want. Concerning sit-ins, protest marches, and other demonstrations," he said, and I quote, "all the street demonstrations in the world, backed up by all manner of civil rights legislation, will not improve the racial situation." He further said, "You cannot legislate men's thoughts, yet any Negro who does not think his salvation lies in the civil rights movement is looked down upon by the entire race. Mr. Fuller said, and I quote again, Negroes must gain economic equality through their own initiative before they can achieve racial equality. He said the Negro's economic plight was not primarily discrimination so much as it is the Negro's lack of desire to improve his lot. And he suggested the civil rights leaders might better spend their time encouraging Negroes to get off public assistance rolls and onto jobs. And he said, if we don't stop the relief trend, over 50% of the Negro population will be living on government reservations within the next 20 years. Now, this Chicago Negro then recommended an abandonment of the protest demonstrations and the launching of a public relations campaign to enhance the Negro image, end quote. Well, I believe this, friends, with all of my heart, as I bring this message to a close. Matthew 6:33, and this is not addressed just to the white race. This is addressed to every race. It said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. God said that. And Paul, writing to Timothy, said in 1 Timothy 4:8, bodily exercise profiteth little. And you could well apply that to the civil rights demonstrations and the terrible mess that we're in today. He said, bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is and that which is to come. Now, I'm for freedom of religion and against all maneuvers to bring about a legal ascendancy of one sect over another, or of one race over another. I'm for freedom of the press and against all violations of the Constitution to silence by force and not by reason the complaints of criticism, just or unjust, of our citizens against the conduct of their representatives. And I am for encouraging the progress of religion and science and good government in all branches. And I believe if we could have a return to God and sensible government and plain everyday Christian living in our homes, in our shops, in our offices, and on the street, and then go to church on the Lord's Day and worship him and receive the encouragement and inspiration from God that we need, there would come a love, a tolerance, an understanding into our hearts that would end our troubles, and the scripture could be fulfilled which says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Well, I hope that I have done you some good on this broadcast entitled Troublesome Times. The Lord told about this in Luke 21, and we certainly should call it to your attention and point out the fact that God has the answer. For your letters in response to this broadcast, my mailing address is simply the Bible Institute of the Air, Post Office Box 949, Mesa, Arizona. Mesa is spelled M-E-S-A. My friends, many of you say, why don't you publish all of this? I don't have the money. But if enough of you people would get in and give liberally and help me, we could spread this thing all over America if we would. Please pray about your gift, and if you want a copy of this tape entitled Troublesome Times, give as much as $5 to help us, and we'll send it to you.